CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
I'm your host, Cam Wells. Today's episode, we're going to be taking a look at some of the ways in which people navigate disability conversations, different facets of life. In this segment of our show, Sarnia Mayor Mike Bradley will be telling us a little bit about how to navigate disability conversations in the political world. So, in terms of the political world, what's the most effective way to talk about disability? Actually raise the point without it seeming like coming across as a hopeless battle, so to speak.
Well, it's difficult. In this last provincial election, there was some discussion in the media, some TV shows about disability issues, but you saw no traction with the government or the other parties. It wasn't an issue. It wasn't at the top of the list. It wasn't even in the middle of the list. And that is the frustrating part. People are preoccupied with other issues. I understand that, economic and social ones, but this is exactly that, an economic and social issue.
So, in that sense, wouldn't it just make sense that some of these parties should take into consideration that most, if not all of us, will experience disability in their lifetime?
I think in many cases, it's just like people don't want to fill out wills because they don't want to think about dying. And The fact is that everyone gives lip service to it at the political level. And there are some very sincere and decent people out there that support disability employment and removing barriers. But the reality is, it is still a side issue for many. If you think about it, in Ontario and federally, we do not have a designated full-time minister devoted for disability advocacy, employment, and access. That's where we're not in the game.
So, are there any steps the public can take to better inform, better educate themselves as to how to raise these matters and actually have their voices heard?
Well, if you watched the last provincial election, there weren't any all-candidates meetings where the governing party attended. It's very difficult in a mass world of communication to get messages out to people. People with disabilities know, or people that are receiving disability payments, they understand fully how difficult it is and the complexity of it. From my own view, and that's why I'm an advocate, is they're too busy just trying to survive and move forward in their own lives to have the energy and time to lobby governments.
So, do you ever find there are any myths or misperceptions when disability is discussed among political types, really?
I do find, Cam, that a lot of the focus is on access. That's important, access to buildings, access to employment. But the last part of it, access to employment, seems to be a side issue, where access to buildings seems to be the focus. And we all know in Ontario that we failed miserably as it relates to meeting the standards that were supposed to be met this year in 2025 as it relates to access. And it's trying to get that message across about there's a powerful workforce out there that's skilled, educated, but because of disabilities are being held back from employment. And that is difficult to get across when people are struggling, dealing with the tariff issue from Trump, dealing with other side issues that are dominating the media.
So How do we keep this from becoming just an overlooked matter, recognizing, as we do, that disability affects every strand of life?
What you're doing, what I do, what many other people are doing on the ground in our communities is the important part. Grassroots always works better than top-down directions. And I think the government of the day, all three political parties, supported having full access in Ontario unanimously 20 years ago, 25 years ago. And yet we don't have it today, and we're not even close in many situations. So as this year unfolds, I think we should remind our MPPs on as much as we can in our communities that we have not met the challenge that they created to do this. And that's an important issue.
So do you see things like the Canada Disability Benefit being along the lines of tossing a turkey bone? And it does something, but it doesn't really do anything.
It doesn't do what it was supposed to do. The promises were made when this was first introduced. I mean, it engaged in it to older people who were advocates and people on disabilities. They were going to have a better future, and it was going to be one that was workable as it made it to their own finances. And since then, we've seen, first of all, a huge delay in implementing it, and it makes you wonder, they're just waiting to implement it fully when we get to the election. But it isn't what it was promised to be, and it took away that hope. In this last election, provincially, the Premier made it very clear, we're doing enough as it relates to Ontario Works and the payments people are receiving. And they're making some comments about what people were doing or not doing who are on disability. And that doesn't help, but that's the attitude that's out there. And all we can keep on doing is pushing and pushing and hope at some point there'll be a breakthrough where federally and provincially governments will realize that this is an important civil rights issue that needs to be dealt with now, not 5 years from now or 10 years from now.
Do you think if someone were to hear the real-life story of someone with a disability saying, I pay $3,000 a month for food, for example, but I get $6 a day from this benefit, it might have more of an impact seen as a person's real-life need as opposed to a statistic?
Well, the human story always works. It does. When you're trying to paint a picture, you can talk statistics, you can talk policies. Normally, as a politician, when you're using the human stories, it can resonate with people. The difficulty is it's usually individuals doing that. It's not this huge force of people saying, this is what's happening in our communities to people. This is what they're living on. And I would challenge anyone to live on the type of payments people live in today's society on, from disability payments, from Ontario Works. It has helped create a homeless crisis where there's over 80,000 plus people in Ontario living on the streets, 80,000 people. It's the same size population, basically, as the city of Sarnia that I'm the mayor of. And those human stories help, but trying now, I'm hoping with the new government, new Ford government, that in the sense they're re-elected with a majority, that they'll see an opportunity here and be leaders on this issue. That's what I'll be pressing to the MPPs and the Premier if I get the opportunity.
So, do you see any positive traction being gained at all?
Well, I think there is. I think there's a better understanding in communities. It is about access. It's about employment. It's gotten more complicated as Ontario's changed the rules as it relates to the agencies, their funding. And from what I can tell, that's not going very well. Here's my own example here of community living. We're struggling to try to work with the new rules and have enough funding to hire people, whether they be students or full-time employees in our community. That needs to be revisited. I'm hoping now that the government's back for 4 years, we can do that with the minister responsible for social services.
So, what would you suggest for persons with disabilities to really get the message across? Is there a particular medium or a particular way they should speak about these matters?
I think it's the old-fashioned way. Phone calls, emails to their MPP. Make sure they're original, they're not mass emails. Just on a daily basis, trying to get across to them. People cannot survive in this environment. And as the whole issue unfolds about tariffs in the U.S., the economy is going to be in much tougher shape. Inflation is going to be much higher, both here and in the U.S., and that's going to make it even harder for people to live. My hope is, because our government promised some big money to help people deal with the tariff issue, it just won't be to big business. It won't just be to the big corporations. It'll also be used to help people that will be impacted who live in communities, who are disabled, people who are struggling every day just to put food on the table.
Like thank you for taking the time out to do this. But if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Great. You're welcome, Ken. Thank you.
In this segment of our show, Megan Marshall from Avalon Employment will be telling us a little bit about how to navigate disability conversations in a workplace. So how do you go about navigating disability conversations when it comes to supporting someone in a workplace situation?
Yes, that's a great question. So the way that I work with folks is a lot of front-end support. So the clients that I work with can and do work independently with some advocacy pieces put in place, one of which would be this very topic of talking about someone's strengths and needs to work colleagues and supervisors. So we have a lot of meetings about, you know, developing vocabulary and language around advocating for oneself, you know, how to talk about the things that you need in order to work as happily and independently as possible. We tried that method as opposed to speaking for people, of course, and there is a lot of the need to be proper and not disclosing people's strengths or needs without their permission. So we're really big on equipping our clients with, you know, language around how to best get what they need to work as hard as they can and as independently as they can.
So that brings up an interesting point. In a workplace, if someone with a disability is talked over or around, do you give any strategies as to how they can handle that without it seeming like an unprofessional situation, without creating more of a problem than needs to be there?
Absolutely. It's awful. I mean, that happens to so many of us, but certainly folks with various disabilities are often, you know, not included or are interrupted. I work with people who have an autism diagnosis, and for a lot of people, there's a processing delay is a harsh word. I don't like that word. They require some more time to process, and sometimes that few minutes is not allowed, and they're answered for or spoken over. So again, you know, we're trying to equip people with the capacity to be adults and to say, I need what I need. So, you know, sitting in a meeting or engaging with someone at work is simply saying, I'm going to need a moment to process that, or I might be quiet for a moment after you answer me a question, and that means I'm really thinking about it. It means I'm processing. From an advocacy standpoint, I'm really involved, you know, at the onboarding level and at the HR level with supervisors and colleagues, being a sort of a go-between, a lens on this type of topic. So all we can do is do our best and inform people what people's needs are. And, you know, that being said, there's nothing wrong with someone with a disability standing up for themselves saying, hey, I was thinking there, or you interrupted me. I do that. And people with disabilities have that right too, without being rude about it. But that's a good lesson for all of us to learn.
So do you ever find that when someone with a disability does take that extra time or does take a moment to process, that if someone talks over or around them, might develop a certain hesitancy for them to speak up in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. Our approach to this is we develop, we call them toolkits, and they're really just sort of back pocket ideas that people can refer to and use for a variety of work purposes. We like to equip our clients with these and their employers. So that type of topic would be in a toolkit, this processing piece. All we can do is hope that people use these tools, speak up for themselves if possible, have an employer that's being informed that there may be a processing moment. That's all you can do, is hope that you equip people with these tools so that everyone can work together and that they're practiced and used. We also are on call to our folks, so we do a lot of sort of putting out fires of this type of thing, this social nuance. You know, people get mixed up communicatively at work. So, you know, we're there to advocate for people, but ideally you're equipping people with how to advocate for themselves, and you're connecting people to an employer that is willing to go along that journey with them.
So from an employer standpoint, do you have any advice as to how they can be best educated or take the right steps to ensure that they're informed as to what their employees need and what they have to contribute?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say wherever you are in the world, there are folks advocates and employment, inclusion people like myself. There's organizations all over the place. They're often nonprofits, so that service is free. And, you know, we work really heavily with our employers. We're involved. We're there on the ground the first few number of shifts to sort of help everybody get a lay of the land. You know, but we also will cold call lots of organizations, different businesses, and say, hey, you know, we offer PowerPoint or a meeting, or let me bring coffee over and let's talk about autism, let's talk about intellectual disability. Just sort of leveling the playing field, giving people some language and tools around what inclusion can look like. And if you can use an advocacy agency like what John and I work with, that you have professional people there to help make those things concrete and give people a chance at work who otherwise are not being utilized to their potential.
So can you give me an example of a success moment where you've been able to support someone through a journey such as this?
Oh my goodness, yes, we have many. We have many highs and lows. But I have one client in particular who we had a long and winding almost 3-year journey together. So I helped support and connect and advocate and learn from him over the course of almost 3 years. He's an accountant by trade and encourages me to speak of him as the success story. And it took us a good number of starts and stops and fails and getting back on track to really learn about his needs and his strengths. And his goal was very particular. He wanted to work from home as an accountant, but we had to learn a lot about how to work in an office first, because even though you work from home, you still have colleagues, you're still accountable, there are Zoom meetings, much like you and I are doing right now. So there's always pieces that you have to learn around engaging with others, and it took us a while to get there, but we stayed the course. And yeah, we work with all sorts of people who we follow their journey. Our program doesn't believe in one job and you're done. I know I've had many, many jobs in my career, and I relied on mentors to help see me to the next part. So I think trusting that our clients have a goal and a vision but need some help navigating, we just stay along the ride with them and keep encouraging self-advocacy and chasing your dreams.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Of course. Andy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Canadian Human Trafficking Hotline is now live to help victims and survivors get vital social and emergency services. If you need help or want to help stop human trafficking, call 1-833-900-1010.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Sarnia Mayor Mike Bradley and Megan Marshall from Avalon Employment. Each shared a little bit of how to navigate disability conversations. In this segment of our show, Anne-Marie Pham will be telling us about CCDI. So, can you tell me a little bit about CCDI and the impact on the disability community?
Absolutely. So, CCDI stands for the Canadian Centre for Diversity and Inclusion. We were established in 2013 as a national charity to support the inclusion, equity, and fairness for everyone, for all Canadians. And that is across all dimensions of diversity. So basically, we are looking at, you know, the multiple identities that individuals bring to the workplace and the way in which, you know, we need to understand those identities and how they show up in the workplace, how we can create conditions, policies and practices to support all individuals to not just, you know, do their work, but also thrive. And so we look at all dimensions of diversity in our work, and that includes, you know, accessibility, persons with disabilities, other attributes like, race, gender, religion, age, different learning styles, and aspects of people's identities that are not just visible, but a lot of them are invisible. And so for us, it's very much about creating an opportunity for employers, people managers, human resources, leaders of organizations, and just individual contributors to know a little bit more about how they can show up respectfully working with other people and create a sense of inclusion and belonging and respect for all colleagues and all clients and all partners.
So it's interesting you brought up the point of invisible identities. Would this include something like someone with mental health concerns or a learning disability, for example?
Yeah, absolutely. There are so many aspects that are invisible, and it does include both of those. It also includes things such as, you know, if someone is neurodiverse and needs a different way for the information to be presented to them, or, for example, are looking, are needing to see the information ahead of time to be able to review the information and structure their thoughts to be really engaged in meetings, for example, then, you know, we would make those kinds of adaptations or accommodations in the workplace and encourage employers to do that so that that individual with their invisible needs or differences would have the tools needed for them to succeed in the workplace, right? So there are so many types of invisible differences. You know, we often talk about neurodiversity, but, you know, there's certainly the mental health challenges as well. So in the work that we do around diversity and inclusion, one of the things that we need to recognize is that a lot of employees who come from marginalized communities, equity-deserving groups, may have directly or through their community experience exclusion and oppression and the lack of advantages, and may have over time as well experienced microaggressions, right? So the, you know, the daily small comments or slights that sometimes are unconscious, sometimes they are very conscious, that really make someone feel like they are misunderstood, there are assumptions made about them, there are stereotypes made about them, and you know, how smart they are, their leadership potential, how they can contribute, etc. And so what we really need to do is just create some good guiding principles for our colleagues and our managers to really create an environment of inclusion and belonging, and start with really good questions to better understand who they work with so that they are able to create, you know, adaptations and accommodations for all of their staff members in order for them to succeed in their job. And we work with over 700 employer partners across Canada, so they are across all industries and all sectors. Some of our employers are very small companies, and others could be very large, you know, international companies, right, with offices and operations even outside of Canada. So we really look at the whole gamut and recognize, you know, that different employers have different capacities and resources. But despite people's capacity and resources, we still fundamentally believe, you know, that diversity is an asset. It's not a liability. And that if a workplace is able to really optimize all of the skills, contributions, perspectives, and innovative ideas that their diverse workforce bring, you know that those companies are going to be actually more successful in improving their product, reaching out to new markets, and know how to communicate to those new markets in a way that is culturally, you know, appropriate and engaging. So there's a lot of benefits to diversity and inclusion that perhaps some workplaces don't think about. And at CCDI, we're here to really invite people into those conversations so that they can debunk some myths, they can create an understanding, the right language, and build the tools that they need to create inclusivity across the board.
So, in your time with CCDI, has there been any success moment in terms of improved accessibility or debunking those myths that stands out for you that you'd like to share?
Yeah, well, you know, we certainly try, over the years to invite thought leaders and leaders in the community to talk about persons with disabilities and how we can create good successes. And so we've had, for example, really good, attendance at some of our events. You know, we invited, for example, speakers such as Angela Bonfanti, who's the CEO of CNIB, to speak about, you know, challenges of the deaf community for the International Day of Persons with Disabilities. We have, we're working with an organization right now to, you know, look at how accessible, you know, we are as an organization. So we're doing some work around our accessibility audit and features, and other employers are also trying to do the same thing. When you look at it at a higher level, for example, what we see is that Canada is making some progress in the sense that, you know, we have now BLC 81, which is the Accessible Canada Act, which is really trying to make Canada barrier-free by January of 2040, right? So within federal jurisdiction, these organizations have this mandate now. And when we look at other jurisdictions like the provinces, there are regional laws as well that, you know, we're starting to see come into play. So the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act, has been in place since 2005, and really trying to move the needle to establish standards for public, private, and not-profit organizations to create an accessible Ontario by 2025. Now, we're already in 2025, and we know that, you know, Ontario is not fully accessible. But there are this movement like that. You know, there's the Accessibility for Manitobans Act and in Nova Scotia, right? And BC is doing some work around this as well. So I think that there is effort on the ground to educate and legislate, but we're still seeing some barriers to making it a reality on the ground.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, sure.
My friends, the way you talk to someone with a disability, or even about someone with a disability, can make all the difference. If someone feels talked around or down to, chances are they're going to be less likely to speak up. Chances are they're going to be less likely to share the gifts they do have to offer. But, by the same token, we speak about and to persons with disabilities with full inclusion and respect on our minds and on our hearts. Chances are we can help them achieve something they never thought they could. Success looks different to everyone, whether you have a disability or not. But, someone with a disability is always entitled to explore their full potential. Having those conversations, having a firm understanding that a disability is one facet of a person's life and not the whole show, can build a bridge of understanding. And that's where it all starts, accepting this is a person, not a set of medical conditions. Accepting that this is a coworker, a friend, a student, a teacher, what have you. Disability extends into every strand of life. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.